This episode of iRescue Radio is brought to you by ProCPR.org. Online CPR training, when you want it, where you want it. And welcome back to another episode of iRescue Radio. This is Roy.
I'm Jody.
I'm Dan.
There's snow on the ground, so that makes me happy.
Lots of snow on the ground.
I like it.
Got a little lake effect going in. Dan, did you get in okay today?
No problems.
Good.
Loving it.
Yeah.
New tread.
Well, we've got a lot to talk about today, and some of the things that we're going to talk about have to deal with things that we use on a regular basis every day. Mm-hmm. This first story we're going to talk about is actually something that we're going to spend probably more time doing as the holiday season approaches. Everyone is kind of, you know, busy during this time of year, and a lot of times they want to come home and just sit back and relax and watch television. Well, there's a new study that's saying too much TV time is harmful to a child's health. You read about that?
Well, I think I've known that for years.
Well, yeah.
I'm thankful I'm not a child.
Right.
So it's not too harmful for me because I'm an adult. Is that what this says?
Maybe you're exempt once you're an adult.
That must be.
You can just absolutely fry your head off.
I'm hoping.
I think it's just saying it's too late.
Yeah. Well, anyways, the more time a child spends in front of a TV screen, whether it's watching television, movies, video games, or the internet, the more likely that child is to become obese or smoke.
Hmm.
Well, that's the bottom line of a series of studies conducted by the National Institutes of Health, Yale University, and the California Public Medical Center. I think they're a little credentialed.
Just a little bit.
Yeah. The studies concurred that in 75% of cases, the more time a child spent watching media, it led to negative health outcomes.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty obvious statement. I think that's something that we can obviously see in our children. If I let my child, having six children, if I let my children sit in front of the TV all day, obviously that's not good for them.
Yeah. Couch potato.
That's exactly it.
Right? I mean, yeah. They're going to eat.
Well, generationally, truly raising the family we have versus how much TV I watch growing up, there's a clear distinction.
Yeah.
There's more channels, more TV all the time.
Yeah.
The days of the rabbit ears are gone.
Yeah, it's accessible all the time.
It's all the time.
You don't even have to get up anymore to change the channel.
Right. And that used to be the time you would get up. You'd get up and change the channel because you didn't have a remote control.
Right.
You had to move at least some.
So that was at least like leg lifts.
Yeah. Something. There was some kind of form of exercise going on there at least. And you had to have one brother hold the antenna for the rabbit ears right.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of aerobics going on.
You had to turn the channel.
Mm-hmm.
There was a twisting motion.
Yeah.
Right. There's a whole lot of exercise going on. Well, listen, the studies also showed a connection to not only being more sexually active earlier than those who do not watch television, the studies also showed a connection to drug and alcohol use and poor school performance.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this isn't just stuff that's annoying. This is downright dangerous.
Yeah, I think a lot of it has to do with the change in our media. You know, back, I can remember when I watched TV, Daisy Duke, she was dressed inappropriately, I would say. But the what you see on TV today.
Charlie's Angels.
Yeah, Charlie's Angels. What you see on TV today compared to 20 years ago is night and day.
Well, they say that in the last statement. It underscores a study that was released by the RAND Organization in November of 2007, which showed adolescents who watch programs with sexual themes have a higher risk of becoming pregnant or causing a pregnancy.
Mm-hmm. It's garbage in, garbage out. I mean,
exactly.
I think you're being programmed almost, brainwashed,
sure.
If I could be so strong as to say that, when you're watching that many hours of programming, it's all produced, right? So it's absolutely going to be the most impactful, interesting. It has a sense of feeling like the norm.
Right.
Right? I mean,
it's only, with having kids in schools, it's in complement to what they're hearing in their day-to-day school activity from other students, from their peers.
Sure.
They're all collaborating, and they're all watching the same shows.
Well, and if they're driving a Beamer around and are pregnant at age 15, what's the big problem with that? Right. So I think it glamorizes it a little bit.
Yeah, the more you get that same negative message, obviously, the more you're going to act on it.
Well, it just legitimizes it.
It does. Yeah, it does, unfortunately.
Yeah, might even make it look like it's too good to be true.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So cautions to that. I think we all as parents know that we have to be conscientious about what we're all watching. I think it also, you know, what this is talking about is for the kids, but I think it also affects adults.
Yeah, you know your kids are in the room. You're watching your shows, you know, even sporting activities. With the commercials that come on and everything else. So it's leave no stone unturned.
No.
It's everywhere.
No, and there's, you know, a lot of research that's coming out to show how beneficial it is to turn the thing off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just spend more time outside. Spend more time around a board game with your kids. You know, one of the things while I was on the ambulance, when a kid would get into trouble, maybe possibly suicidal or ran into some problems or was involved in a gang shooting or something like that, as a parent would say, it's like I don't even know my kid. You know, and looking back now, having kids myself, I think that was a true statement. I don't think that was a question. I think it's really true. I don't know that I know my, you know what I'm saying? Right. I know, but we spend a lot of time together. But I think some of these parents, unfortunately, the TV becomes a babysitter.
Yeah.
And maybe they don't know their kid.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, on that same line of technology, television, gaming, things like that, another article came out about the technology that technology may be altering how brains work. You know, we goof around and talk about how sitting in front of the computer and you're working all day, you feel like you're a machine yourself. But this article literally said that it's rewiring the way kids think. Mm-hmm. Did you hear about that, Jody?
Technology has not done anything to me at all.
Me either.
I'm just fine.
I'm socially adept.
Yeah, I tell you, I see this in kids. It frustrates me
because they really talk like that.
Yeah, well, not exactly. I think, you know, maybe I'm talking like an oldie foley. Oldie foley? What was that?
You are an old fogey.
Oldie. Oldie but a moldy.
An oldie but a moldy.
Do you play gaming?
Yeah, I'm. I don't know what I do, but I think, you know, I see this in kids today, and unfortunately, boy, I tell you, it's tough, because when you see kids that just do not know how to talk to you as an adult, that's so frustrating to me. But, you know, how are kids taught to talk? Well, you're taught to talk online. You're taught to text. You're taught to email. You're taught to Twitter.
LOL.
LOL. Well, BFF. You know?
Well, interestingly enough, in conjunction with that, My understanding of this article is that the amount of time kids spend socializing is what they're talking about.
Yeah.
They're saying they're technology wrapped.
Yeah.
They're not out as kids. Our parents kicked us out the door and shut the door and said, don't come back till dinner.
Sure.
Sort of thing. That's clearly an exaggeration, but that was
it wasn't
look at us four boys. But we went out and interacted with our friends' parents and their we were in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
And you said hello, Mr. Hughes, and you didn't call him Jack, and
made eye contact.
Yeah, and you made eye contact and you responded and respected because Jack knew my dad. There was the expectation. It was practice.
Well, sure.
And what they're suggesting here is, I mean, this one kid is online from 6 to 12 hours a day.
Yeah. Online. On a computer. And that's not just because he's a programmer. I mean, he's not gaming, a programmer. He's gaming.
Music, it's chatting, it's texting, it's da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
Which we're not suggesting that's a problem at all. The technology in itself isn't bad. It's clearly the time involved. It's out of balance.
Yeah. Well, this happened, you know, and this was an article that was sponsored by Dr. Gary Small, and we're going to chew it to pieces like we always do at the show, but and have some good old-fashioned fun with it. But Dr. Gary Small is a very legitimate professor of psychiatry in the University of California, and he's trying to expose that too much of this is literally destroying fundamental social aspects of how kids and people, how to show facial expression when talking to somebody, how to read nonverbals. Well, you know, like when someone's trying to turn around because they've got to go pick up their kids and the other person keeps talking and following them all the way out the door. I mean, if you have the control through a virtual society,
right,
to just type everything, you don't have to have facial expression to do that.
Right.
Hence why you have to do the little abbreviations, which just, they kill me. but yeah. The LOL for laugh out loud. Yep. In fact, I hear people actually say that instead of doing it.
Yeah.
Maybe they're joking around.
Well, it's become, but, you know, the vernacular of the
yeah,
day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So. But his concern is, you know, that they're not going to have the right social skills. Dr. Small says, the effect is strongest in so-called digital natives. I guess that's a coined term he's using. And these are the 20s-year-olds who have been digitally hardwired since toddlerhood. He thinks it's important to help the digital natives improve their social skills and older people, what he calls digital immigrants, improve their technology skills. At least one 19-year-old internet enthusiast gives Small's idea a mixed review. And they interviewed this kid named John Rowe, who lives near Pasadena, California. He spends, this is the kid who spends the 6 to 12 hours online a day. And he flits from instant messaging with his friends to games like Cyber Nations and Galaxies Ablaze. Don't worry, guys, we won't charge you anything for that little punch. To online forums for game players and disc jockeys. Mm-hmm. Well, they interviewed Rowe. He says, social skills? I'm sorry. Anyway, if you read this, it sounds funnier. Sorry about that. Anyways, I'm sure he doesn't talk like that. Social skills? Rowe figures he and his buddies are doing just fine in that department, thank you.
But you know what? There are a lot of other people I just don't know about.
His friend's going to the bus. Yeah.
So that's kind of what he says. He basically says, but he thinks Small may have a point about some other people he knows. That's like the classic, I'm okay, but I have this friend who has a problem, right?
Yeah, exactly.
He says, if I didn't actively go out and try to spend time with friends, I wouldn't have the social skills that I do, said Rowe, who reckons he spends 3 or 4 nights a week out with his pals. You can't just give up on having normal friends that you see on a day-to-day basis.
You know, I tell you, this brings up a major thing. When it comes to the actual development of the brain, I think that's one of the things the guy was trying to get to in the article, that we don't develop the sophisticated analysis or comprehension skills that we really need to develop by that actual personal communication, talking to real people instead of texting or emailing or making an avatar. And
sure. You can kind of hide behind that stuff, too, I think.
You can hide, like, everything.
Well, you know, it's interesting. It goes on to suggest that more than 2,000 years ago, Socrates warned about a different information revolution, the rise of the written word.
Oh.
Yeah, which he considered a more superficial way of learning than the oral tradition.
Ah.
More recently, the arrival of television sparked concerns that it would make children more violent or passive and interfere with their education, where history repeats itself.
It does.
Yeah, exactly.
And so there's arguments on both sides.
Sure.
But I guess, you know, a normal society knows what a balanced amount is.
Sure.
And if your child is just has a severe capacity, inability to engage others,
yeah.
I would suggest the last thing they need is more of non-social interaction, or a virtual interaction.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a topic for another day, but
sure.
There's a real big argument about this virtual networking.
Yeah.
And it has supplanted, in many instances, normal relationships with friends, with peers, with kids in the neighborhood, with this, with that.
Right.
And even in the business environment, or more email exchange is occurring than physical visit and phone call and things of that nature.
Yep.
I think everything in its healthy balance is really, it's hard to quantify it, and I'm sure there's a great debate there waiting to happen. But
well, I think what you bring up is really important too when we talk about the personal touch. I mean, how many studies have been done about the interaction of human touch?
Right.
And how that affects a person physically, spiritually, emotionally.
Well, from all the senses.
From all the senses.
To see the person.
The dopamine releases, the endorphins, all the stuff that makes us who we are. You know, I really think that sometimes we hide behind that falseness.
Yeah.
And we got to be careful about that.
Right. Comfort levels get developed.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Technology is a great thing, but we got to put it in its right perspective.
Yeah, that's the point of the.
It's like, Cliff, if we didn't have technology, we wouldn't be doing a podcast today.
No, exactly. Yeah.
We need it.
Sure.
But it needs to be balanced.
It does.
Balance is the key.
Right. And I think Socrates hit a point, too.
I liked him.
He's I don't know. Yeah, that guy, he just doesn't have very smart so great. At all. You know, so, oh, what? Oh, Socrates, there you go.
Well, shifting gears a little bit here. You know, a lot of talk has been in the news about plastics.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we from everything from BPA, bisphenol A, in the can liners in your Coke, and or not Coke, but it's just not, that's kind of picking one, but all soda cans.
Yeah.
But not only soda cans, but in your canned vegetables, canned fruits, anything canned in metal usually has a plastic, soft plastic sealed liner on the inside to keep the flavor from adopting the metallic taste. That was developed sometime, what, in the 50s or something like that, I think I read?
Yeah, I don't even know when it was developed.
But yeah, regardless, we've had this in our environment a long time. The water plants were missing some of the chemicals. They were looking for all the things like E. coli and the bad bacterias and things that could be very harmful, right? But they were missing some of the hormones that are in the waters and different other chemicals that can really add up. Well, now this melamine has hit big news, right?
Kind of sounds like candy. Melamine.
Ooh. May I have a piece?
That sounds good. Do you want a piece, Dave?
Well,
rock candy?
Rock, yeah.
Oh,
plastic rock candy. Anyways, the FDA discounts the danger from melamine in U.S.-made infant formula. You know, this has been one of those things where it's been in formula. They found it where, in China?
Yeah. Oh, it was in milk, actually.
In
the milk, yeah.
Oh, and also in the baby formulas. And it put a lot of kids in the hospital with some serious health problems.
Right. Yeah.
Well, anyways, they started to change gears and say, well, what if it's in ours?
Right.
Right? And they weren't testing ours. It's not like we've had this huge outbreak of infants going to the hospitals with the same symptoms. But anyways, the FDA has been starting to sample different formulas and different products. And guess what? They're finding trace amounts of melamine. Now, the question comes in, how much is too much?
I'd say any.
Yeah, I mean, are we a little concerned? I mean, you know, it's just a little cyanide.
Yeah, just a little poop in the brownie.
Just a little poop in the brownie.
That's fertilizer for the soul.
Yeah, you call it whatever you want to call it. I call it poop in the brownie. And any parts per billion of poop in a brownie to me is too much,
that's
right?
You got
so,
it.
And I think that's what they were suggesting is that they were trying to determine what the safe level is, and they really couldn't identify that.
Well, interestingly enough, and this is going to sound like conspiracy theory here, okay? Call it what it is. But listen to this. The agency detected trace amounts of the toxic chemical in a single sample of the Nestle Nutrition's Good Start Supreme infant formula with iron. The levels of the melamine found in a sample of that infant formula do not pose a safety risk, the FDA said. However, further down in that same column, it says that the FDA has not reached a determination of what safe levels of melamine exposure are.
Yeah. So
am I the only person that concerns?
No, it sounds a little funny. It's like, well, it's safe, but then we really don't know what safe is.
Right.
And well, they haven't identified what that level is.
No, yeah. That's right. They have not identified.
And clearly, you know, nobody's dropping dead.
Well,
you know,
it's
not an instant poison.
Well, sure.
But it could be, they don't understand the long-term impacts.
I understand that. However, we don't die instantly of cigarette smoke either.
But we're dying slowly.
Right.
It was something, it was something that was highly encouraged in the 40s and 50s.
Yeah.
And now we find out that it's a major problem.
Sure.
So are we encouraging people to put melamine into baby formula? Well, no. I mean, it's,
right.
So why is the melamine there in the first place? One's got to ask.
One must ask.
Yes.
Right.
So really what it comes from is actually it's cleaning products. It's actually the industrial cleaners that they use on the products. That's where the melamine is coming out of. It's not like they're taking it and saying, let's put melamine in there. That sounds fun.
Well, no, I have to
you're
say,
taking
though,
umbers with you, Joan.
I am.
You're taking umbers.
Yes, because.
Umbridge. Umbridge. Sorry. I was wondering what umbers were.
That's embers.
Oh, that's embers. That's when he's really hot.
It said that there is trichloromelamine, which is an approved chemical for use as a cleaner in food processing for equipment and utensils, and that breaks down into melamine when used. Melamine is also approved for use in objects such as can liners and packaging materials. Mm-hmm. So I have to say,
double dipping.
Is it coming from the spray bottle of the cleaner, or is it coming from the can liner, or is it coming from dust, or is it, is it a multiple source? Yeah.
All right. It's not like they're, purposely, let's put melamine in for a filler. It's all the products that we use to hold the things like baby formula. Sure. And we're not thinking about it. It's just the same thing with plastics and BPA.
Right.
It's the same concept. It's like, well, let's put plastics in all can liners.
Yeah, and it states it here. It says it was not deliberately placed in the formula.
They don't believe.
Right.
Correct.
Was that the conspiracy?
That's the conspiracy theory. Well, no, of course. I don't believe that either. I don't think that anybody's going to purposely, let's hope. Nobody purposely puts things like that into foodstuffs. Mm-hmm. However, there's a lot of debate when it comes down to money. We're big into petroleum industry. You know, this whole plastic thing is a byproduct of petroleum. Mm-hmm. You know, if you put the kibosh on plastics, can you imagine the side effects financially that would have on manufacturers of plastic items in the petroleum industry?
Oh, no question. Well, what's truly interesting here is, you and I have Roy been talking about it for the last year, about plastics and their impact in our bodies.
Yes.
And it was in the fringe media, if you can label it that,
yes,
a year ago.
Right.
The Associated Press is...
It's all over.
The cats that are talking about
this. It's all over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For the FDA to have to come out and correct it, it sounds like they're doing it to the Star magazine.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? There's legitimate news organizations that are in, legitimate scientists that are really speaking to this stuff.
Yeah, this is way beyond tabloid.
Exactly.
Yeah. I saw Bigfoot, and he had a can of melamine and put it in the baby formula.
And it was in the Ohio Valley.
Yeah.
Bigfoot's
not. I resent that statement too.
I just think we need to be really careful and
learn more about it.
Become
more educated to what's going on.
And there's a lot to say for going back to good old fashioned, non-processed, non-bulk canned foods.
Mm-hmm. You know, this article is interesting. One line that I just totally disagree with in this article. It says that, they'd be appalled, or rather than say appalled, but it says they can't believe that people would go back to making their own baby formula. How bad is that? Well, it's not bad. I mean, I totally disagree. This article's trying to tell people, you don't make your own baby formula because that's terrible. You won't get all the nutrients and everything you need.
Yeah. When we know there's a lot of ways to, I mean, there's food processors now. Now we're getting into first food stuff, though, right? But, I mean, I think that we're going to see a revival in mothers who want to breastfeed their children.
Mm-hmm. I hope so.
Which is like perfect foods, right? Yeah. I mean, study after study, realizing that sometimes parents can't. Right. We understand that. There are medical conditions that prevent that from happening. But for those mothers who can, the decrease in diabetes, mm-hmm. the infection rates that drop because mm-hmm. of the antibodies of the mother, that mm-hmm. those great proteins and that those wonderful nutrients that come to that child to give them good brain food, good antibodies, immune system, there's no replacing that. And I think these types of formulas try to do that.
Right.
And unfortunately, they fall short every time. Mm-hmm. And that's why they have to put so many vitamins and minerals in that. I've read somewhere that the mother will give up its own nutrients so that the milk gets the nutrients for the child. And that's why osteoporosis occurs in mothers unless they get good calcium and things like that while they're in the childbearing years. But I think this stuff, as it comes into the light, there's a lot of parents out there that really care. They care about their kids. They care about themselves. And I think in the long run, as this stuff gets exposed, we're going to become better stewards and clean up our acts.
Absolutely.
Yep. Yeah. Stop taking it for granted that everything's safe and everything's okay. Right. Some of this stuff
comes from social pressure.
It does.
On the manufacturers.
And convenience.
And what consumer demand is.
Sure. I want it fast. I want it now.
Well, 5 years ago, we weren't buying organic groceries at the...
No.
At Meijer's.
There wasn't such a thing.
Or any of the grocery stores. It has become much more readily available and more less cost prohibitive,
Dan,
to do it.
5 years ago, I thought organic meant it was a vegetable.
It doesn't.
Wow. You know what I'm saying? I mean, if it wasn't man-made, oh, then surely it must be organic. You know, right, we didn't realize that they were talking about pesticide-free none of these hormone additives and things like that. And it's hard right now. And anybody who's trying to live a fairly organic, pesticide-free diet, it's tough. It's expensive.
Yeah. It takes more work.
It takes more work. It's inconvenient. Yeah. But I'll tell you, it might not be a bad idea. And the more demand, I think it's going to get better and better. And there'll be more supply. And hopefully the prices will come down.
A lot of the difference is that, just like I said, it's more work, it's more time, it's more effort.
Sure.
It's the same products from even sometimes the same exact producer.
Yeah.
Such as eggs, for example. I know in this area we have two egg producers not too far from where I live, huge producers. It's one company, but they have their organic division on this side and they have the regular egg producing on this side. It's just a different process.
And neither shall the two meet.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And interesting. So, it's not that, like, oh, it's an amazing, totally different product. Well, it's not. You said it's just, it's more time consuming because they don't put the pesticides. They don't do the things that make it so you can just pop things out quickly.
Right. So that would be an interesting subject to talk more in depth about. Now we're going to talk about something that's really true and dear to the heart of iRescue Radio, and that is CPR and cardiac arrest. Two things that have come to our attention. One, locally. We actually got a blog entry, which we'll be talking about in a moment. But we found a local basketball player had a full cardiac arrest on the basketball court.
That's pretty amazing. And a 16-year-old, in fact.
Yeah.
And 16-year-old, that's... it's pretty amazing. It's unusual for a 16-year-old's heart to stop in the first place. It's not normal for kids to have cardiac problems.
Yeah, no. I mean, we all know that there can be congenital heart defects. We know that there can be, you know, WPW. We know that there can be these situations where kids will have an impact, a collision. And what kind of happens there is like a precordial thump where we get almost like an R on T phenomenon where... the compression on the chest and the heart strikes the heart at the wrong refractory phase of the heart and kind of sends it into a dysrhythmia. So there's also been talk about athletes that are either doing supplements, and some of those have gotten in the way. And in certain cases, kids that grow too fast, you know, they're very tall. There's been some talk about what does that do congenitally on their makeup. In this case, this kid seemed to be totally healthy.
Yeah,
a completely healthy 16-year-old. He's scrimmaging on the basketball court, and it said in the article that he went to the floor, appeared to be having a seizure from the coach, trainer, and some bystanders, but instead of coming out of the seizure, he went into full arrest.
Yep.
Correct.
Yeah.
And the good news, and this is the very good news about this article, the people there acted right then and there. They didn't sit there and go, well, I don't know what to do, and wonder. They acted right away.
Yeah, what was really neat about this is that it sounds like there was a nurse, registered nurse, who was there watching. She jumped down out of the bleachers. The trainer had been trained in CPR. The coach, I believe, had been trained in CPR. Yep. And as soon as they realized that this young guy was not coming out of his seizure, it sounds like they started CPR right away, activated the emergency medical services. Now, it did sound like that the first person there to do automated external defibrillation was the ambulance. And I don't think we see that a lot. I think in many cases now, at least in metropolitan areas, with the big push of AEDs, most medical first response teams, which in our area tends to be the professional fire or the volunteer fire departments, they usually can arrive in a metropolitan arena within about 2 to 6 minutes. So activation of EMS, starting CPR right away, you get an AED on the person's chest in 6 minutes or less, you have the most favorable outcomes. In this situation, it sounds like this poor guy was in arrest for an extended amount of time. And I don't know, it doesn't necessarily tell the details. But part of what tells me that is that... that they were doing CPR all the way into the hospital.
Yeah.
And that's not a good sign usually.
No. And the good news is, you know, it was because of the quick action of the people. Because of they didn't sit there in panic and fear. Because they acted, they did what they had to do right away, they started compressions, They started with the airway. They did everything right.
Yep.
This gentleman lived.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. They did a follow-up on him, and it sounds like, you know, 4 days later, he was up and walking around. The local television channel, you know, did a little interview with him. He's slow to recover. You know, he's up, and that's good. You know, some of the things that I think we should remind everybody of is some of the things that slows people down on this stuff is that they're, A, afraid they don't know what to do.
Yep.
Right? Mm-hmm. It's been a long time since I've been in a class. I'm not sure I'm going to do it correctly. And if I don't do it right, who's going to sue me?
Mm-hmm.
Am I going to hurt the patient? Or am I going to kill the patient, is sometimes their feeling. And am I going to get a disease? Probably not so much in this case. It was a youngster, but it is something that when you come across you know, someone on the ground and it's an unknown person, you would question, do they have hepatitis B, hepatitis C, HIV?
Right.
And I think those fears, when we talk about that a lot in pro-CPR, is that going to stop a person from rescuing? And I think, inequivocally, yes, it does. In my experience of being in the training room, and Jody, yours too.
Yeah, absolutely. Stops people all the time. That's why on the ambulance, when we're called to a scene like that, we get there as EMTs, paramedics, and the people are just standing there panicking rather than doing something because of those fears.
Yeah, yeah. They were too afraid of things that really are not genuine. Now, mm-hmm. the bloodborne pathogens, yes, I can understand that. But what people, I think, really need to understand is that dead is a pretty bad state mm-hmm. to be in physically.
It definitely is.
And no breathing and no pulse is exactly that. It's a clinical state of death. Now, there's another level of death, too, and that's biological. And the only thing that separates clinical and biological is time. How long are you without oxygen circulation? You cannot hurt a dead person any worse than the condition they're in right now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not without actively trying to hurt them. So you cannot make a condition worse when a person is in cardiac arrest. You can only make it better if you try.
That's it.
You can activate 911 in this country, and you'll have a dispatcher on the phone walking you through the steps of CPR over the phone. We have cell phones galore in this country. So you'll have tech support right there online. I think they really need to understand how simple basic life support is, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even to the point where American Heart came out with a promotion, and we did a little segment on it, too, that hands-only CPR outside of a hospital setting is just, after activation of EMS, it's chest compressions, fast and hard, until help arrives.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it.
That's it. You know, it's one of the things that we highly encourage people to go to our website for training, procpr.org. and profirstaid.com. You can watch the videos for free. It doesn't cost a thing. They're there. The training is available 24 hours a day, all the time. It's so we so encourage people to do that.
Yeah.
Even if you don't need the certification, fine. That's okay. Just go to watch the videos.
Just go to watch the videos.
Get the training.
Yeah.
Because it'll help you to be more confident if you run into that situation. Like
it also helps with with, you know, not being able to sleep.
Yeah, well, that too. No, the video is actually pretty good. The athletic trainer that was on the scene, who actually was there doing the CPR, he said something that is pretty powerful. He said, "This is something as an athletic trainer you're prepared for, but you hope you never have to use." He says, "I've been in emergencies before, but never had to use it. But the good thing is, when the emergency came, he did it."
That's right.
He did it. He acted.
Yep.
And that can't encourage people enough. That's what you need to do. Jump in. Start CPR.
You bet. I bet that school is probably going to be looking at an AED for the...
I bet you do.
Yeah. Boy, if they'd have had that right there, that would have been great. Mm-hmm. AEDs are getting more and more plentiful, but they're not everywhere they should be. Mm-hmm. But we should do another segment on that, too, and talk more about that. But, you know, interestingly enough, there was another story came in. And it was of a person who saved a life. It was a neighbor. And she was witnessing this father. Dan, did you hear about this?
I did. It's the worst fear of many parents.
Yeah.
Their infant or young child is not breathing well or not at all.
Yeah.
And you know well, Roy, I would call you up in a panic and pray you'd come running over in your skivvies to help me out. And never bothered to get the training myself.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they did what any good parents would do in an emotional state. They raced to the car with the child.
Right.
They probably didn't call 911. The order of activity probably wasn't what it should be. By the grace of God, there was a neighbor nearby, saw what was going on and yelled over that she was trained in help, uh-huh. in helping in CPR. Do you need any help?
Yep.
And the mom, fortunately, took a breather to say, yeah, we need help.
Yeah.
They were just going to race to the hospital, which may or may not have caused worse damage. There's
right.
only minutes when this is going on. But the baby was wheezing, so it was getting a slight amount of air. It wasn't literally not breathing, but it was in a serious situation.
Yeah. Well, you know, I have to say that's probably the biggest impulse is just get him to the hospital.
Yeah.
Right?
Go where help is.
Yep. Just, I don't know what to do.
Don't wait for it.
I can't take the time to call. It's only going to prolong the problem.
Yeah.
Just get him in the car. We'll race him to the hospital, and all will be well.
Right.
That is not the case. Mm-mm. That is not the case. You can't urge people enough to call 911. Again, because of the way the emergency medical services work, your fire departments are stationed within 2 to 6 minutes of their call area on average, mm-hmm. strategically. Unless you're out in rural Timbuktu, which is God's country, and you know what I always say about that? You know why they call it God's country?
No.
So if you die, you see him faster.
No, sometimes that's very true.
I really wanted that farmhouse, but not anymore.
Well, it's and from one sense, it's true because mm-hmm. it's just 2 money miles between responders.
Yep.
And any way you look at it, if you're at the one end of the extreme distance, mm-hmm. it's going to take a long time. And if you add bad weather, slippery roads conditions, yep. it just prolongs it, which is why we encourage everybody to get trained, at least in the basics.
Yep.
It's easy. It's mm-hmm. very easy. Mm-hmm. So get trained. And as Jody said, you can go right online and get at least the information and the cognitive training. But in this case, had he put the baby in the car and taken off, gotten stopped in traffic, the child stopped breathing altogether, that parent wanted to do the best thing it could for the child, but in reality, that may have been the worst thing.
Well, not only that, if you think about the ramifications, now that you say that, I've delivered my wife to the hospital ready to give birth.
Yes.
I was breaking most laws getting
yes.
there. You put other people in at risk.
Yes, you do.
In a panic situation. You are not thinking about conscientious
no.
driving.
No, it's true.
Did you take the time to put the child in the car seat? I mean, those
yeah.
things go out the window.
Right. Yes.
And that's why emergency personnel want you to stay where you're at.
That's right. And emergency medical services, you know, here's what we've always said about that. The people that don't need an ambulance most of the time know exactly the type of care they got all the way to the hospital, and it's almost always very basic.
Right.
Vital sign taking
right.
and a lot of paperwork.
Yep. Yeah.
So they have this impression that we're a glorified taxi, right?
Right.
The people that were in serious condition don't remember the ambulance ride.
And what occurred at the scene.
They don't realize that we're trained in obstetrics to be able to deliver babies. They don't realize that we can do full IVs. They don't realize we have life-saving medications, mm-hmm. Intubation equipment. We can defibrillate.
Yeah.
We can pace. We can support. There's a lot of stuff that we do in the back of an ambulance that supports life mm-hmm. on the way to the hospital.
Correct.
In this situation, we've got McGill forceps. We have mm-hmm. suction equipment. We may have been able to get this obstruction clear for this baby, on the way to the hospital. Mm-hmm. And then the ambulance always fast tracks the patient in.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
You don't have to stop and try to explain to a security guard what's going on and so forth. So by all means, call 911. If it's not needed, they'll tell you.
Right.
You could probably drive this person into the hospital.
Yep.
If it's serious, we'll tell you it's serious, and we'll be the ones taking you in, and it's the way you'd want to go in. But in this case, it sounds like this rescuer, who we hope to have an interview with, mm-hmm. Was able to intervene and was able to actually provide the rescuing procedures mm-hmm. necessary.
Yep.
And by the time she did another look, listen, and feel to check to see if the child was breathing, the baby pushed her head away from her face.
Yeah.
Isn't that awesome? That's,
it is so awesome.
Cool. That's yeah. so cool.
And it sounds like it was maybe yeah. a partial obstruction.
Yep.
But enough that the child was unconscious
mm-hmm.
and the rescue efforts of this person was able to revive this child. And
right.
much to the gratitude of the parents
mm-hmm.
and much to the satisfaction of the rescuer. So
right.
Good story.
Good story.
Yeah, absolutely. Good.
Happy endings.
Good stuff. I like
two happy endings.
This is good stuff.
Yeah.
I love it. When people rescue and great outcomes happen, what more can you ask for?
That's awesome.
Yeah.
All right.
The key is buy a home, make sure you got a nurse living next to you.
Right.
That's the moral of the story.
Nurse,
hi,
paramedic.
Did you have a pool?
Oh.
And a healthcare professional in the area.
That's exactly right.
There you go.
So from iRescue Radio, that wraps up another episode, and we can't wait to talk to you again next week. Be safe, and we'll see you next time.
If you have anything you would like to contribute to iRescue Radio, you can contact us toll-free at 866-661-5701. Or visit our website at irescueradio.com. The commentaries in this podcast may not reflect the views of iRescue Radio or any of its sponsors or subsidiaries. iRescue Radio will not be held liable for any damages resulting from the advice given in this podcast.